Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. It's Friday, August 21st, 2020. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here today. We got a good show for you because a group I really like to work with, that's the National Association for Gifted Children. And we're going to talk about gifted education during remote education and the advocating for your kids, what teachers need to know, how this is all working out. We've got two wonderful people. We've got Kathy Nillis, who is the Parent Services Manager for the NHEC, the editor of Parenting for High Potential magazine, okay? And Dr. Ellen Hanick, who's Program Manager for Gifted and Talented Kids at the Denver Public Schools, and she's on the NHEC Board of Directors. It's going to be a really good show. Real quick, we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. We'll put a new schedule up as we do every Saturday. Tomorrow, okay, for next week's shows, follow us on Twitter over at EduTalk Radio and on LinkedIn at my name, Larry Jacobs. All right, please go over and to my guests, I'm saying this, join our Consortium for Equity in Education. We are the American Consortium for Equity in Education. It's free to educators over at ACE, ACE-ED.org. We carry a lot of editorial on gifted children. And in fact, Jonathan Plucker, the good president and a dear friend of ours, okay, has an article in this particular issue coming up. All right, so it's going to, we do a lot of work with the gifted. We love doing shows with this. So please join our consortium over at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, as we spend a half hour or so with Ellen and Kathy, let's go over here. There you go. Kathy, are you there? It's Larry here.
Hi, Larry. It's great to hear from you this morning. How are you today?
Oh, I am just fine, and you're doing well. And everybody, are you in Washington? Where are you now? Where are you?
I'm actually based in Illinois, so I am a remote worker for NAGC,
cool.
And I've been with NAGC about 6 years, so I'm very familiar with remote working and learning.
Yes, indeed. Where are you in Illinois?
I'm outside of Chicago in a suburb called Elmhurst, Illinois.
That's what I was looking for, which suburb it was. I used to live in Deerfield, one of the many
there
places
you go.
I used to live. There you go. I know it well. And Ellen, how are you, Ellen Hanick?
I am doing great.
Thanks for being with us today, Ellen.
Yeah.
It's earlier out there.
Absolutely.
We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, my goodness. Has school started yet in Denver?
Denver Public Schools is remote through first quarter, but the Cherry Creek Schools, which is in the metro Denver area, is going back hybrid. So there are many different districts doing many different things.
And are you Denver Public Schools? Is that your?
I am in Denver Public Schools is where I work, and then my son goes to Cherry Creek School District. So.
Oh, there you go. Okay, and I know Cherry Creek well,
there
as
we
a matter
go.
Of fact. And it's beautiful over there. It
yep.
really is. I love Denver, and I hope it's a nice day out there. Okay, is it? Because I live in
it
Maine
is.
Now, so it's a beautiful sound. Yeah, I love looking up the mountain. Oh, my God, it's just gorgeous. What can I say? So just enjoy it out there. I hope your window view faces the mountains. That would be very, very nice, Ellen. Okay, does it?
It
did
does,
they give
actually.
You an,
yep.
Did they give you an office? Did they give you an office that looks at the mountains? That's the key question.
No, we're working remote right now, but our floor looks out to the mountains, but we're on the ugly side of the of the building, but we can walk over that way and see the mountains pretty quickly.
And by the
gorgeous.
Way, I love this little fact that Michael Bennett, who's one of my favorite senators, your senator, okay, was a former superintendent of schools. I love that fact.
Yes, he was. Yep.
Yeah, I think he's a good man. Okay, there's my political point for today. Okay, very good. Kathleen, you are your editor of the magazine. Okay, you're at NHEC, though remote. Okay, and I'm just going to ask you the simple question to start off. We're going to spend a half hour here. What's the reality right now for kids and parents of gifted children as the schools reopen? And if you want, you can start and just swing it right over to Ellen, who's literally in the trenches out there. Okay, Kathleen.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, from NAGC standpoint, since I am the parent liaison, I do get all the questions and emails that come in from parents. And to be quite honest, Larry, it's all over the map. You know, I think parents learned a lot during the pandemic in spring when we had to suddenly shut schools. So they learned things like what their strengths, challenges, and interests were of their kids. And whether or not things were too easy to complete. I mean, I heard stories from parents saying their student was finished with their work by, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, and they didn't know what to do with them.
The greatest mistake of educators. The greatest mistake of educators, underestimating your students, that period, end of discussion. The more rigorous you make it for them, the happier they will be, and will they come through for you? But that's just my thoughts. Okay, go ahead, Kat.
Well, and especially for gifted children, right?
They
can complete tasks so
quickly. I'm talking
for
everybody, but especially
right.
for gifted. You are absolutely right.
Right.
Have
right.
them memorize the Encyclopedia
right.
Britannica. I'm telling you, okay? Make it tough. Anyway, continue. Yeah.
So, and then they saw some kids, you know, had issues, especially if they're twice exceptional, which means they have a disability and they're
sure.
gifted. So in terms
sure.
of processing or planning and organizing, completing assignments independently, there were some challenges there. So anyway, the bottom line is now that, you know, we're kind of somewhat in a better situation, that schools have had the summer to plan, things are still a bit chaotic in terms of their opening plan. So I came from the high-tech industry, and we used to call this FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And I think that's really where we're at right now, right? Parents are afraid from the effects of COVID, right, on their children
yep.
and family. Some
yep.
families have autoimmune diseases and at-risk family members,
sure.
so they don't want to send kids back to the classroom. They're uncertain because they don't know really what precautions schools are taking and if it's going to be enough, and whether the plan their district has prepared will be a good match with their child. And they're doubtful, whether it's founded or unfounded. They're not sure if the school can meet their children's needs based on the spring's experience, and
yeah.
that every gifted child
yeah.
has their own unique needs. So the bottom, and particularly classes like enrichment classes, like music, art, PE, or those deep dives into areas of interest that gifted students need, parents are just not sure if it's going to be a good match. So they're kind of exploring all their options,
yeah.
right, as schools reopen. Alan, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, and by the way, all of that,
you can
put that into for every kid, and these kids are not alone, the gifted kids, okay? All kids went through this, okay? But
true.
For gifted, it was probably, yeah, I know you know that. And it was a bit magnified, I think, for the gifted kids. And for kids, I don't want to lump this together, in special ed per se, okay? It was a little more magnified, okay? But everybody did the best they could. Ellen, you can answer that question how well – what we're doing right now, but Kathy brought up an interesting thing. What did you learn, okay, from the spring semester in dealing with the gifted and talented kids? Because everybody went into the spring doing the best they could. That's all we could do. But now we've got at least some data, I hope, or some anecdotal thoughts about it. Ellen, what do we know? What did we learn?
So, I mean, I think we learned a lot in terms of, number one, teachers are pretty flexible in terms of,
yeah.
hey, one day you're in school face-to-face with your kids, and the next day, now you got to figure it all out online.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly we learned that. And we learned that the students that were interacting with the teachers, it's really based on relationships. So if you don't have those relationships
Bingo.
With students, they were not engaged. And
wow.
then you go in and you add all of the additional elements and the traumas and family situations and access to internet. I mean, it's crisis planning on top of crisis planning right now because, you know, in the spring it was, oh, my gosh, we have to get access. Students need
mm-hmm.
access
yep.
to internet.
Yep.
They need access to technology. They need access to the materials. And now we're in a place where, okay, we've had a little bit more time, and now it's, okay, they've had the trauma from the summer, from the pandemic, from life
yep.
experiences, you know, from the inequities and justice and Black Lives Matter. And so what does that look like over time in terms of where students are coming back to the classrooms. And so now teachers are really going to have to figure out how to start the school year and build those relationships, recognizing that every single child has had some sort of trauma. And so
right.
it just comes into a different way.
Right.
In looking
You're right.
At,
and
what
I want to
like.
Say some, and I want to say something else. You know, we tend to think, maybe I'm building my own prejudice in here, but I know better. I just want to say this: we tend to think of gifted kids as easier to teach. Let me say it that way. Okay, and that they believe me, I know. I'm just stereotyping here. Okay, and my point is, I want to ask a question. Was there an equity challenge, okay, for the gifted kids? Okay, and I want you to make the point. These are not just kids that are going to go to Harvard, okay, and are of the elite and highest socioeconomic class. Okay, these kids need special attention. Okay. And what was the equity challenge that Denver Public Schools faced? And I know they did, like every other school district, okay, but amongst the gifted and talented, because you are the program manager of that.
I am. That is correct. So, I mean, one of our biggest things with equity was making sure that because of the way that the structures are and we're a site-based district, so it was kind of a crapshoot in terms of the spring.
Join the club.
Because
yep.
Everybody was just kind of doing their
yep.
own thing. And I mean, and it's not we had many meetings with other districts in the Denver area, and we were all kind of just treading water and trying to survive.
Yeah.
So like, hey, it works. And so some
yes,
schools
I got news for you, it did work. You survived. It did work.
Yeah.
The trading water worked.
Exactly.
You
worked.
Survived. This is good. This is good.
We survived.
Right? Yes.
So, you know, some schools did a great job with engaging and providing those higher level tasks. And again, it was through that relationship. And so then they were able to really dive into Ooh. Student interest. For other schools, it was a real challenge in terms of, like, I've got 30 kids I'm trying to engage. At this point, I've got 15 that are engaging. I'm just going to provide what I can. And as a teacher who's also trying to tread water, you know, that was the best. I mean, now as we're moving into the school year, it's really saying, okay, we have to make sure that we're trying to offer differentiated. I mean, we have to be offering differentiated activities and lessons. And again, it's still, I mean, we're struggling still just because, you know, the Denver metro area has about 8 different health departments. That's probably just a little over-exaggerating, but within the entire metro region. And so Denver is operating with Denver Health. Cherry Creek has a different health department. Douglas County has a different health department.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're getting different guidelines. And so there's not even consistency across the districts. And then, as you know, the guidance keeps changing and there's nothing, you know, from a national level perspective or even a state level that says this is what you should be doing. So
let me give you a hint.
Don't
hold your breath waiting for the federal level. Just a hint. I hope that helps for you. Okay, that ain't happening. All right, so and the states should pick up on this. I hope Denver, Colorado does, because it's just so really, really important. What have you heard? And well, actually, let me ask this. Kathy, let me go back to you. Knowing all this, okay, what's the role of parents now? Yeah, we're getting back into school.
I think the role
school.
Of parents, you know, I always encourage parents, especially of gifted children or twice exceptional children, to kind of serve as their case manager, if you will. It's a role necessarily that parents aren't prepared for when they welcome a gifted child into their family. But in the end, through the child's lifetime, there's always going to be a time that the parent needs to advocate for their child in one way or another. So the first thing is to be in tune with your child and their strengths and their weaknesses, their challenges, their interests. I think the other thought I have related to parenting is it's really hard, I think, to tune out the national and social media because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I also follow, you know, different Facebook and Twitter
sure.
accounts for even my local district. And to be quite honest, it can be very confusing because parents are very vocal. And so in the end, it's hard to know where to take your advice from. So from my perspective, I feel like parents almost have to be a bit of a detective, a needs assessor, kind of a problem solver in really evaluating their family situation objectively as possible And actually, we have a resource sheet that we'll talk about later.
Well, we're
going to
talk about it now, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
I wanted to talk about it now.
We have about 50
resources.
Yeah, there's a resource
sheet, all right, from
NAGC. Yeah, we have 50 resources at NAGC called Alternative Education Options. And on that includes a couple of needs assessment tools, if you will, that can help you make those decisions in terms of what's the right fit for your family. But I think it's really, it's not necessarily listening to what your neighbor's doing or, you know, and or your sister's family. It's really what's right for your family, your child,
right,
their needs, considering all kinds of issues, not only the health side of things and the safety side of things, but what they need academically and socially. So, and parents are looking at all kinds of options. I mean, the hard part is, you know, for those that are more affluent, they're looking at things like pandemic pods and micro schools,
right,
where they're talking about hiring teachers to come into the home, or they're looking at co-ops where, let's say I'm an expert in English and my husband's an expert in finance. We teach our kids ourselves with our neighbors. And those might not be the right solutions. They might sound glamorous, but from my position, I always encourage parents to really work with their school and their district first, because I think if they can advocate appropriately, they might get 80% of what they need. And frankly, there is no perfect solution, particularly in these days.
Every kid's different. So you hear this. I got to go. Now we go back to Ellen. Ellen, you hear this, okay? And you're director of the program for Denver Public Schools. How does this work for you from that point of view? You have to somehow manage all this.
We are. I mean, absolutely. I mean, the conversation and the communication with the school and the gifted teacher and the classroom teacher is critical. We recognize that, I mean, teachers want to meet the needs. I mean, there are very few teachers went into teaching to to be hurtful to children. I mean, and if they are, then they are clearly in the wrong profession, and hopefully they're on their way out. Teachers care about their students, and so it's truly a matter of capacity. And so, and we want to make sure that the families, I mean, we have to have a partnership. But if we don't know, if the teacher doesn't know or hasn't been able to have that conversation to find out that this is too easy for the student, then they don't even have the ability to recognize right away that, you know, in juggling everything else and now remote learning and lessons and everything, that their student isn't their student isn't being challenged. And so having that open conversation and then just being patient. Like, I'm not saying that parents need to be, like, so patient that their child never gets a challenge, but recognizing that it's a new environment. I mean, classroom teachers did not go into online education. If they went into online education, they're already teaching online.
Yeah.
So classroom teachers went in to have that day-to-day interaction with the students.
That's right.
And there's a lot of things that happen and a lot of challenge that happens in that day-to-day incidental conversation. And so, I mean, it's really that patience and kindness. And it's also that partnership with the teacher to say, okay, well, I'm, you know, in the classroom, I can do this, and here's some other places that you can go. I mean, the great thing about the spring is companies opened up thousands of opportunities.
They really did.
Opportunities that were free.
I forget you said that.
I'm not sure how many of those are still happening, but I'm sure that as, you know, we transition, I mean, you know, I haven't been cut off a lot. So, I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, families, you know, with some partnership, that's, hey, here's a great math resource, here's something else additional. Teachers just need that partnership with the families so that they can then address that. And then, I mean, as families are really trying to figure out what to do or trying to balance, you know, do I stick it out with the public school? You have to recognize that things are not set up the same way now that we're starting the school year. I mean, in the spring, a lot of school districts were kind of like, okay, well, whatever your third quarter grade is, your grade
that's
can't
it.
Get worse.
And actually, that's my next question. You brought up the word. I got to ask you this. I wrote this down. Assessment. Okay? you know, your third quarter grade, that's your grade for the year. Goodbye. I'll talk to you in September. Hello, it's September.
So why would children engage?
We're done, basically. And the kids like learning anyway. Believe me, they do. It can be fun. They know that. But assessment, okay? And actually, I'll ask Ellen because she's with the Denver Public Schools. But, Catherine, we got to look at, you know, the parents are all involved. How do they assess if their kid is learning? Ellen, you first, then Kath.
So, I mean, I think assessment is, you know, it's not necessarily a standardized assessment. So, you know, and pre-assessment. So, I mean, it's really talking and having the conversation and using some higher level questioning in order to find out what the student's learning and not learning.
I love that.
And then it's balancing with the standards. And so just because they're able to complete a test doesn't necessarily mean that they understand the conceptual pieces behind it. And if they understand the conceptual pieces, it's then that balance between.
You must
have
seen my math. You must have seen my math SATs knowing that statement. Right. Yeah.
And you're completely successful now, and it has nothing to do with your score and your math.
I avoid math at all costs. So, yes, that's true, ever since that traumatic experience, okay? But it's true. It's just passing the test, you got to actually get into this with these kids and make sure. And Kathleen, what are you hearing? You know, you talk to the parents. The parents are talking about homeschooling. How are they going to assess their kid?
Well, that's a good point. Basically, you know, we're encouraging folks to definitely check with their state before they do anything, because every state, just from a legal standpoint, has their own guidelines and standards and restrictions, if you will. Certain states don't even allow pandemic pods or microschools, for example, to be considered, if you will, legal,
that.
So
what?
That the child could come back into the district, right?
Wow,
I mean, the
I
thought
didn't know
is
that.
Whatever
wow.
you whatever you do as a parent, that they should be looking down the road to say, when my child will come back into the district or the school eventually, whatever that time frame might be, because typically there is a time frame where they need to come back in, how will they segue back in? In terms of, so there are standards basically at the state level, as Ellen mentioned, that are available for homeschoolers to follow. And then I think just on a day-to-day basis, you know, how do I know if my child is learning? You know, gifted kids in particular have this natural curiosity, right? Their eyes light up, they get excited,
that's right.
they can delve deep for hours on end on a subject.
Yep.
And so I think it's looking at not only the results of what they're putting together, you know, what they're contributing, but it's their demeanor, it's how they're feeling, are they shutting down? And for some kids, like 2E students, I heard a lot from parents saying, my child could not demonstrate mastery the way the teacher demanded it. And so are there ways parents can advocate with their teacher for the child to demonstrate mastery in another way, through another modality, or, for example, not completing all the math problems that are the 50 that are on the sheet. Could they do 10? Because gifted kids pick up concepts so much more quickly, they need much less repetition than other students. So I think there's lots of ways to, you know, to show if your child is learning. The other thing is capture their interest. I heard from a lot of parents that said during spring they found that their child was interested in things they didn't even know they were interested in. So
there you go. There you go.
Right? Because they were sitting next to them at the table, right, when things were happening.
Which brings up the next question, okay? And I'm going to go back to Ellen. Ellen, I hate to say it, is the remote learning, could this actually be better? If we really learn how to do it as educators, will it be better? That's great.
I think some things, absolutely. I mean, because you are able to, so if I'm a teacher that works across 4 different schools, I can group my students in ways that I've never had the opportunity to do before.
Yeah.
I can pull a 5th grade lit group that all is sharing the same interests, and I can have more discussion. And so I think when online remote learning is done properly, I think it can be amazing in terms of the challenge. And I think that the social connections, if you've got that, it's kind of a balance between the how are you doing the social and are you spending time for social? I mean, we've all been in meetings more recently than prior, you know, where you join a meeting and literally nobody says anything. And then, you know, and then you walk away and you're like, I don't even know who was in the meeting. I just know what the content was. And then you've been in other meetings or other situations where, like, you are jumping in and there is lots of conversation back and forth. And you would think that you were all in the same room together. And I think that, you know, as adults, we're recognizing that there's, just because it's online doesn't mean it lacks social emotional interaction.
Exactly right. You're
and
exactly
for
right.
some of those, it's better. Because now I've got peers. I can make connections
teachers.
That I couldn't do before.
Exactly, and teachers should be having fun right now, okay, and really doing the deep dive, okay, into how online learning works, okay? And it's
absolutely.
Not just you standing there in front of a screen. That's online teaching. Teaching is easy. It's the learning
right.
that's the hard part. Okay, if they're not learning, you're not teaching.
Right, and
just in case people don't know that.
And online doesn't mean that you're interacting with your computer the entire
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
I mean, online still means you go away. It's just some of that. It's the delivery method.
It's unbelievable. You guys have so many challenges with all this. I mean, it's just NAGC always comes through. As I said at the beginning of the show, we work a lot with them with our magazine, which is up online over at ace-ed.org. By the way, you guys will love it. Jonathan Plucker, who's usually in there, who's president of NAGC, will be just wrote an article for us. And we love having Dr. Plucker with us. He's there almost every issue. And John Sagoda writes for us as well. Okay, who's the executive director of? We really care about this, and we believe it is an equity and accessibility issue. Okay, so you guys have an assignment is to go over to ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, and join our consortium, because you two are terrific. Okay?
Thank we'll
you.
Do
yes.
it. We're do- well, I, we've
so
done it through NAGC, but I will personally join as well, Larry.
Do it now. It's free. It's free. We just want your voice in there. We need you.
I will join ASAP. As soon as we get off
the
show.
Magazine. Enjoy the magazine.
Yeah.
This is great, ladies. Enjoy.
Yeah, they're
enjoy
good.
Illinois. And you know, the mountains of Illinois. I always say ski Arlington Heights. It's absolutely
yeah.
beautiful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You mean the little hill?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Mount Prospect. Climb to the top of Mount Prospect.
Oh, my gosh.
I know it well. Okay. And Ellen, good luck. Enjoy the beauty of Colorado during these COVID times.
Well, thank you.
And enjoy
and
the
Larry, if I could just remind.
I appreciate being here.
Yeah,
could I remind folks just to go to nagc.org because we have so many resources on this, particularly in a
thank
section
you.
Called Resources for Educators and Parents During COVID-19. So all of these things we just talked about today will be posted there on our website.
Great, nagc.org. And that is, believe me, a great website and great organization. Thank you both. Stay safe, okay?
Thank you.
Thank
you too.
You.
Have a great day
thank
and a
you.
Great weekend. Thanks.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Kathy Nillis, NAGC's editor of Parenting for High Potential, their magazine. Okay, she's the parent services manager over at NAGC, NAGC.org. And Ellen Honick, who's Dr. Honick, program manager for Gifted and Talented at Denver Public Schools, and she's on NAGC's board of directors. And they're now in our consortium, so ace-ed.org. Be like them. Join up. Hey, I'm Larry Jacobs, everybody. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much for listening.